Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Madam, there's a gentleman here that wishes to see you alone.
Well, that's both hilarious and preposterous. Now, is everything ready for tonight's reading, Mr. Darling?
The gentleman is exceedingly tall, handsome, I suppose, but the crowd of guests are fascinated by him. They're all staring at him. He's politely asked twice for the privacy of your company.
Well, people in hell want ice water too, but they aren't going to get it. He can remain amongst the other guests.
Yes, madam. Striking man, though. Black top hat. Orange glowing orb at his lapel. Unusual rhyming name. Mr. Twister? Mr. Lister?
Mr. Blister? Oh, my stars. Please, Mr. Darling, usher him to my sitting room and offer him our very best netherworld tea and give him a venomous kitten as company. Explain to him my obligation to these people.
Guests, madam.
Welcome in. Please come in, dear guests, and find your way to an open seat. I know that some of you would like to sit as close to the fireplaces as possible. A few others want to get a closer look at our Mr. Darling's stylish new haircut. Please don't try to pet him. He's not fond of that. Not all the time, anyway. Come take your seats, as we have quite the question for you to consider. I'm your humble host, Miranda Merrick. Many of you are lifelong inhabitants of our happy old village, aren't you? Your families have been anchored here for the past, dare I say, century, or perhaps even two. You may know that my own family history here goes back more generations than I care to tell you, but I will say that we were here first, having made arrangements with some indigenous persons. We've been very happy here, and life has gone along just as we've desired. That's the crux of it, isn't it, my dear guest? To pursue everything one most desires in your short time above ground. So, what's a truly good life worth? Who would you be willing to partner up with to have exactly what you want while you're here? Tonight, we will meet a few people who endeavored to strike the ultimate deal, to get out of life everything their little black hearts desired. Tonight's reading is all about deals with the devil. And yes, I know it's a distasteful subject to many, but pandering to the masses has never been our forte, and definitely never will be. The foremost issue here seems to us to be one of availability, perhaps even conviviality. It seems as though lots of these folks probably did attempt to take the high road at first by praying to the higher powers that be, and didn't hear anything back in regards to their petition or plea. They tried all of that ask and you shall receive ramble and tripe they've heard so much about, only to be met with silence, which seems rude. I mean, it's only common courtesy to reply to a being that you've created and love so much, if only to supply a genial refusal, don't you think?
Hello, dear silly human. In regards to your request for unending wealth and health and fame, the answer is no. Have a nice day.
Is that so difficult? If you're so busy, which we totally understand, then maybe have an angel stop playing the harp for 1 second and kick a little note off of a cloud. Not too much trouble, We respond to all of the appeals we receive here in the Midnight Library.
Can we borrow a book?
No.
Can we have a tour of the library?
No.
Did you ever find my friend?
Not all of him, no. It's not too taxing. We don't mind. So, it also seems that the opposite line of reception is much more communicative and open to negotiations. Apparently, in past times, the devil and all his little wizards were all about everywhere all the time, just waiting for anyone looking to strike up a conversation that might lead to an agreeable accord for both participating parties. Our Miss Tess easily amassed several tomes containing tons of tales of just such treaties, some reaching an end result that didn't always go as you might expect. During your last visit to the reading room, you may recall that we shared the story of Jack the Blacksmith, who ended up being the reason we now have lovely jack-o'-lanterns. And there are stories upon stories, some of them of a biblical nature, that started the fire, so to speak. But this first tale is one that rather sets the tone and indeed lays the foundation for such stories in general, as it appears to be the root story from which nearly all others may have blossomed. And we would be remiss in our duties to you, my dear guests, if we failed to at least give you a brief summary of the legend of Faust. Our sources say that in the 1500s there truly was at least one German gentleman, or perhaps two, named Faust or Dr. Faustus, who by practice, in addition to being a physician, was also a known astrologer, or even one given to dabbling in necromancy, the custom of communicating with the souls of the dead. One might guess for profit or fun. Assuredly, the good doctor's reputation tended to travel in front of him, as there were rampant rumors about his knowledge of alchemy and powers of prediction and sorcery. After his death around 1540, these rumors greatly intensified, expounding in every direction about his wicked reputation. Nice. Some derided Faust's abilities, labeling him a fraud. Although famous Christian soldier Martin Luther, on the other hand, totally bought into Faust's evil expertise and made him the focus of his cautionary preachings, thereby giving the grapevine tales credence, and probably inadvertently giving some the idea that might and control over one's own life could be gained by colluding with underworld demons, or even Satan himself. Briefly but deliciously, the very first published account of Faust's life from 1587 was written by one of our favorite authors, Anonymous. Titled Faustbuch, the book chronicles a wild account of Faust's disillusion with the world, his subsequent conjuring of the devil Mephistopheles, who offers him a 24-year-long contract, which Faust signs into action using his own blood. The book then elaborates about Faust's magic-infused antics and rompings around the world with Mephistopheles. It tells of his violent death being ripped apart by demons and his ultimate, as promised, damnation in the fiery pits of hell. A play rendition of this first edition was written by Christopher Marlowe a few years later in 1592. It was entitled The Tragic History of the Life and Death of Dr. Faustus, and strangely entertains the audience by simultaneously professing that Faust's evil deeds are so heinous that he deserves his brutal death and eternal damnation, and at the same time encourages the audience to have empathy and pity for the poor tortured doctor who fails to save himself by way of simple repentance. It's probably safe to assume that whatever the hazy origin of the original man or men, the legendary Faust Devil Deal likely became the seed story from which all others have sprouted, thankfully. Another favorite told in far-off places is that of a man named Pan Twardowski, who is said to be, like many, a Faustian character. What's fun about his story is that there are subtle variations to it that allow you to choose your own adventure. You pick the ending that you like best, allowing either Pan to outwit the devil or choose to let the devil take his prize. Easy choice, we believe, but... From the 16th century, the story goes that Pan Twardowski was a nobleman. But that apparently wasn't reward enough in life for him, and he sought for more. He somehow met with the devil, and together they drew up a contract which stated that in addition to remaining a nobleman, Pan would become knowledgeable and possess magical powers in exchange for his mortal soul, which the devil would take possession of at the eventual end of Pan's life, bringing him to hell for everlasting torture and torment. Pan, being a pragmatic and meticulous fellow, asked that a rider or clause of sorts be added to the contract, proclaiming that the devil could only take his soul in Rome. The devil agreed to the term as it didn't really matter to him, and Pan signed the agreement with the tricky idea in his mind that he would simply never travel to Rome. As per their contract, Pan Twardowski's wealth began to grow. He found he was endowed with secret knowledge by only wondering about the things he wished to know. He knew and could accurately predict the future and the fate of others. He understood alchemy, the wisdom of the ancients, astrology, and necromancy. His notoriety caused him to be summoned to the court of King Augustus, who wanted a powerful wizard to aid him in his reign as the King of Poland. But particularly because his beloved wife and queen, Barbara Radziwill, had recently died, and he desperately wanted to contact her dear departed spirit. Now, I feel this just may be the right spot in our reading to inform you, my dear guests, that all of these people I'm reading to you about from the heavy tome here on my desk were real people. They were once living and breathing as you and I are this very moment. Pan Twardowski was born into a class of actual nobility in Krakow, Poland, where Augustus was the actual king from 1548 until 1572, and his treasured wife Barbara was the Queen of Poland and the Grand Duchess of Lithuania. Her tragic death truly took place on May the 8th in 1551. She was 30 years old. Naturally, the next thing I invite you to consider is, do you believe that Pan consorted with the actual devil to gain his sorcerer's abilities? Because in the time following Queen Barbara's death, records state that he reportedly raised her ghostly spirit from its eternal rest with the use of a magical mirror, and through this mirror it was said that King Augustus conversed with his dead wife and was much comforted by her ethereal presence. You no doubt recall that I promised you that you could choose your own ending to this story. In the first ending, after much cavorting around and mischief-making throughout his life, Pan Tartofsky became fond of good wine and decided to meet up with his old friend the devil for a night of drinking in an inn of Mr. Devil's choosing. The two cozied up at a table in an inn called Zim, which in Polish means Rome. And this was all the devil needed to win, as Pan wasn't quite meticulous enough in his clarification of the definition of his conditional term. And the devil claimed his condemned soul right there and then, expeditiously delivering him to the eternal inferno. There's the further telling of the tale, where, just as the devil is flying away with Pan's soul, Pan sends out a pleading prayer to the Virgin Mary, who has mercy on him, and causes the devil to drop his prize. And Pan unbelievably lands on the surface of the moon, where he remains in a kind of lunar limbo even now. There's even another contractual variation that some find much more amusing, in which Pan's initial clause directs that before he must surrender his soul, the devil must first live for an allotted time with Pan's wife. The devil tries to fulfill his part of the contract upon Pan's death, but finds Pan's wife to be, let's just say, too much woman for him. The devil flees from her presence and gives up entirely on collecting Pan's soul. We wish there was more to be found about her. She sounds fascinating to us. At the Broom and Fang pub, in a little dark nook, why not come by and sign our black book? We'll just be chatting and enjoying our tea. A tall, dark stranger, and you and me. You'll like him just fine, and the next thing you know, you'll agree on some terms with our friend from below. He's well connected with transformative powers. There'll be a new you in just a few hours. You'll be sexy and wealthy with knowledge untold. You'll be famous and envied and never grow old. He'll only ask that you sign your good name. He'll only collect what is rightly his claim. You'll get every last thing, like the contract has said. In the end, it won't matter, because you'll be dead. Don't listen to rumors at the Broom and Fang pub. Our friend's name is Jeff, not Beelzebub. Now, dear guests, let me tell you a tidied-up version of a tale from the late 1500s about a gentleman named John Fian, who wove a tangled web, indeed. This story, too, is documented, minus any speculations, of course. And because I myself have an appointment this evening, I'm giving you the less gory, more light-hearted points, mostly, of this rather treacherous story. Our gent John was a well-known Scottish schoolmaster, noted for his bookish brilliance and strict manner of instruction by way of beating his students, which some of you may know was quite common in general well into the 20th century. Schoolmaster Fian was said to be so bookish in his nature that he lacked the charm and social skills needed to comfortably consort with the ladies, or attract any of them as a prospective mate. Upon meeting the older sister of one of his male students, Fionn fell hopelessly in love with her, but failed to even utter a single kind word to her. Directly after meeting the young woman, John Fionn cornered his student, the brother of the girl, and made him a rather tempting deal.
"Looky here, laddie. If you will bring me 3 fine hairs from your pretty sister, I won't beat you as I have during your lessons."
One can imagine an opposite threat was silently implied regarding what would happen if the boy refused. John Fionn had obviously found within his beloved books a recipe for a love potion by way of which he intended to bewitch his heart's target. The frightened boy obeyed, mostly. After his mother discovered the plot, the boy was given 3 hairs to give to his demanding schoolmaster, but because his mother was familiar with the ways of witches, she supplied the boy with 3 fine hairs from a cow. One account claims that on a school morning soon after, the smitten cow arrived at the school, dashed into Fionn's classroom, jumped into his lap, and slathered him with slurpy licks of her bovine tongue. She followed him home. She followed him into town. She pined for him wherever he went. Soon, rumors of Fionn's true intentions and more dangerous rumors of the bungled bewitching caused the local magistrates, i.e. witch hunters, to accuse him of being in league with Satan. Fionn denied this, so they began to torture him in ever-escalating fashions. They twisted heavy ropes around his neck and head and body. They fitted him with weighted boots that, when manipulated, crushed the feet and fractured the leg bones. He confessed to not only bewitching under deception the cow, but also to casting a madness spell upon a local man whom he considered to be his rival, and to leading a coven of witches under direction of his master, Satan. Although Fionn confessed and recanted his admissions several times while being held by his torturers, he did say the oddest thing shortly before his story ended. After being tormented once more, Fionn was required to list the name of witches in his charge by morning. He fell asleep in his cell without doing so. When the guards came for the list, upon waking, John Fionn immediately began telling them the vivid dream he'd had. Almost in a state of delirium, he told of how the devil appeared to him in a dream, burning in anger inside of his mind. The devil told John that if he confessed the names of the witches, he would certainly die. While the guards reported to the court what their prisoner had now said, John Fionn escaped. And I would love to tell you that that is the happy ending to this story, but no. Fionn was quickly captured because, well, it's fairly difficult to run away on broken legs. And when he was captured, they broke the rest of his limbs and set him ablaze upon a huge burning stage. Some said a horned figure was seen standing over him in the flames. Now, I hope you take from this reading and these tales whatever it may be that makes the most sensible counsel to you, our dear guests, and I hope you make your way safely back wherever you've come from. Now, be off. I mean, good night. Go on then. Follow Mr. Darling. Bye-bye.
Madam, there you are. You disappeared instantly after the reading. How was your meeting with your friend, Mr. Blister? You look different somehow.
Fine.
You disappeared with a more than mysterious stranger for several hours, and all you could say is fine. Are you taller? Is that a new tool hanging from your chatelaine?
I'm exactly the same as I've always been, and I don't believe I need to give an account to you. So kindly pull your snout out.
Yes, madam. I was only concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Darling. By the way, if a Mr. Redwhip ever appears, he's to have exactly the same welcome.
Most certainly, madam.
The Midnight Library is brought to you by Miranda Merrick and Astonishing Legends. Sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. Please consider becoming our patron, where everyone gets something, by visiting patreon.com/midnightlibrary. And for some real fun, check out the Midnight Library and Broom and Fang pub merch on redbubble.com. Just search Midnight Library.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.